Well, we're happy to welcome Terry Gillespie into the studio, and he's playing Saturday night in Hawkesbury at Le Chenal on November 14th at 7:30. And he's just back from an amazing trip that he was mentioning to me earlier today.
You're always doing amazing trips,
Terry.
Well,
we didn't hit Alaska, but we got awful close.
Is that right?
Yeah. Tell me about that trip again. I know you mentioned it to
me. Well, it was a really something else, I got to say. The fact that it was done during the run-up to the election was a particularly Canadian thing, you know? Now, I'm from the originally from the prairies, so when we get to the prairies, I really like it, what happened is we drove 6 hours to Toronto with our van, as we do quite regularly, dropped the van, hopped on the train, and I played music on the train to Vancouver.
Right across the country.
Yeah, and they paid my way. Really nice, you know, wow. You just meet all these people and do this thing. So I did that.
And where do you play on the train? Like, do they have a cocktail car or something?
Yeah,
like that?
In the club car. So that was the leg to get to Vancouver. The thing of it was that I kind of got a feeling of the whole country. I mean, you get the feeling of the whole country because you cover the whole country.
Absolutely.
But we do that
at ground level
fairly regularly. However, with the election happening, you could feel it.
Yeah.
Then we went to Vancouver Island and played a bunch of gigs there. We went as far as Tofino and Duncan, Victoria, Port Alberni, Courtney, bunch of driving. And bumped into Linda there. Linda was staying in Courtney, taking care of her parents' place. Okay. She's back now, and she'll be around on Saturday, so we're going to do that. And anyway, from there, we went back to Vancouver, flew to Whitehorse. Whitehorse, we rented a car, this is Kathy and I, and drove to Dawson City, with 14 gigs on the way. Like, every day we did a gig.
Are these all like house tours?
House concerts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a home roots thing.
Okay. You know. Fantastic.
And then we flew to Old Crow, and Inuvik, two more gigs.
Excellent.
And played in the school and you know.
Wow.
So it was just a totally amazing. Then we came back down.
This is a pure Canadiana concert, eh?
Full tilt.
Yeah, for sure.
And also, I'd never been to the Yukon, and oh man, it's people said, you know, send pictures. Nah. You can't take a picture of that.
You just can't do it.
Is it just big and wide open or what?
Well, I figured out how to describe it. And what it is the feeling that you get with the prairies and the feeling I get because I was born in southern Alberta, wide open cowboy feeling. It goes forever.
Yeah.
I love that. Some people find it really alarming, but it's big, whatever it is. But I get a real serious feeling there. Then you get to the mountains, and the mountains are aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just, wow, you know. Well, in the Yukon, you have both of those, except they're both happening at the same time.
Wow.
So you get this serious, peaceful feeling and this really old mountain thing. You say, it's, and there's nobody there. We drove for 5 hours between gigs, and you didn't see any cars.
No.
Not one.
Yeah.
Jeez. So what were some of the highlights of the places you played? Were they supper clubs or kind of more
mostly people's houses.
Oh, yes. It was
home roots. So it was in people's houses. And they've been doing it for a while up there. They were one of the first people to start doing home roots.
Right. That's a good way to get entertainment.
Well, it's a hell of a trip to get there.
You know? That's right.
I mean, you really got to think about going up there, you know.
There's some logistics involved, for sure.
Yeah, but they have it organized, and we went for that. What they've done is I know the guy that it invented it. He's kind of my age, and we are parallel universes in the late 60s.
Okay. But, yeah.
And he's a radical. And the idea is the music that we play, the, you know, blues, folk, that kind of music, that's coffee house music. Started out in people's, basically you get just a room and put people in there and drink coffee and whatever else you did.
Yeah.
And it was just quiet and under the radar, no big deal. And that led to an entire world of music. Hmm. And during the 70s, it looked like it was, you know, kind of really successful because there was a lot of clubs and a lot of people, and they all started selling alcohol and expanding into the business world, and it looked like it was working. Mm-hmm. Well, I lived through it, and Yeah, it worked, except it didn't actually work. It just, the musician's gig slowly got chipped away. Whenever a decision had to be made, the people that gave up was the musicians.
It became institutionalized, basically.
Well, until finally somebody said, why should we have these unruly musicians in our place when we can just play records?
Yeah.
You can't argue with that. That's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
So now we get back to the roots of the thing, which is as it should be.
Yeah.
Music is music and people are people.
Yes.
And the closer you can get to that, the closer you are.
Yes.
Everything else is secondary, really.
Yeah.
What a great concept. So he's actually put it into action, and it's now covering the whole country, I think.
Oh, yeah. And right the thing of it is, it's good musicians.
Yeah.
They are good. We've been to several, and they're all amazing.
Been disappointed. It's always been really, really good, yeah. Louise, I'm going to hand it over to you. You have a few little questions lined up for...
I know that I was speaking with Linda Clouette-Mackay at the Le Chenay, and so you're playing this Saturday night at Le Chenay at the Maison de Lille, and it's with Wayne Stout and Lyndall Montgomery. And you were just saying to Rob before he left, it's going to be more of a concert format. What can you tell us about what you're going to be playing? I know Linda hinted you were going to have a trumpet back out. I don't know if that's true or not.
The word is out, Terry.
Oh, geez, I forgot about that. But
well, I don't know. I own a trumpet. How many notes do you need?
That's right.
Well, the thing of this is we can be more musical, not really more musical, but more, we can pull back and be a lot more dynamic. We can play some very quiet things and move around a bit. We don't have to play to a dancing crowd, which levels out the music somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love it all.
Really. I guess it does. I never really thought about it before.
That's true.
If people are dancing, it's a different thing. You got to feed them something.
But this will be more performance.
Oh, yeah. We can sit down and take a tune apart. Because you got to listen. There's nothing else to do.
You got a captive audience.
Yeah,
I've often wondered when you're, I know I've been several times to the Grand. I mean, like you said, that's just like a big seething group of dancers. Do you feel like you're just there and ignored?
No.
Do you feel ignored? Or do you feel like your music is running?
The dancers are part of the music. Wayne is a dance oriented player. And he does everything else. But when we get in that environment, the dancers. Oh yeah, man, they're like extra instrumentalists.
It's very symbiotic, isn't it? You feed each other.
Yeah.
I can tell.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. It's a really great thing. It's like all different. Music is all different. You take a little piece of music, a melody, say, and you can do anything with that melody. You could make a dance tune. You could make a marching band tune. You can do anything you want. You could have a symphony.
Mm-hmm.
You could make it a gospel choir kind of.
Yeah, you make it a ska tune. Whatever you want. You do all
it's
that.
True.
There's such an outpouring of energy at the Granary. It just feels sort of like I know some of the people that were there the last time I was there. They just it feels like you're in this building that's like Dorothy from Oz. You're floating in the sky. All the stress of life falls
good.
Away, and nobody wants to go home. And it just feels like you're insulated from the world in there for some reason. Yeah.
I played a lot of gigs in my life, and I'm up to date. I'm playing the gigs now, that are the good ones in Toronto and Vancouver and all these places. And there's no gig that's better than the Granary.
Wow,
nowhere.
Yeah.
It's there's a number of reasons for that, but. The short answer is because the music is honest, the people are direct, and it's a party. We've sort of cut all the extra stuff out of it, and it's a really friendly thing.
Yeah.
How about the fact that you're on your home turf? Does that make a difference too?
I'm sure that helps. Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's comfortable and relaxed and knows each other, and it's.
But that said, that you get comfortable on every turf. People, they really are the same all over the place. Mm. It's great, but when you got a place like the way we run it at the Granary, it's. There's nothing that gets in the way of the gigs.
Yeah,
just
it's a very
nice
it's
for
like,
everybody.
It's all about the music and all about the dancing. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, so it's just comfortable, And
it's just like everything's peeled away, and it's very, like you say, honest. That's a good word for it.
Yeah, it's just simple,
very.
You know.
Well, speaking about the magic of music and the power of music, I noticed you brought in one of
I felt so bashful. I mean, it's what you do for a living. It's like somebody saying to me, could you bring some business cards with you when you come or print me some?
Well, then you better bring some, you know.
I said, if you wanted to bring your guitar, you were welcome to.
Oh, no, I'm up for that.
That's fabulous.
I got to tell you, I was on the CBC in Whitehorse, last minute kind of thing. We're driving through and they phoned and said, can you come over? And I said, yeah, okay. I came over and we sat for, and it was quick because they had a whole pile of people to talk to. And I walked in, we talked for, oh man, it seemed like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Quick tune, boom, out. I said, wow, that was fast, you know.
Sausage factory time.
Well, that's how it's got to be, you know, because there's important things to do, right? Well, at least five people came to me in the next week, all over the Yukon, saying, oh, I heard you on the CBC.
Oh, fabulous.
Man, you know, that was, you know.
Good exposure.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Well, it's what we're trying to build. I mean, we're no CBC here, but we're trying to become the voice of the community here, slowly.
Well, you heard what I said about the coffee house.
Yes.
The
yes.
hippest thing there is, it never gets better. And you just keep doing it, and it's the same. It's the largest. It's the biggest thing there is.
Yeah,
and it spreads, and people know, and there
I think
it is.
We'll have to look for an old fashioned coffee machine to set up in the corner here and get some mood lighting happening.
Coffee's good.
Yeah,
didn't even offer
you. Yeah. So Terry,
I'll give you a little tune.
That would be great.
And you know, no, I don't think you can. This is for the radio people. Yeah. You can't see this guitar, but it's made out of what they call German silver.
Mm.
It's not German silver. It's not German and it's not silver, but they call it German silver. Anyway, it's got three little cones inside where the bridge.
Like little speakers.
Yeah.
And but it's not electric, it's acoustic.
No, they vibrate. So you get this kind of
resonator
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got a little tune here, which is a dead simple tune. It's like a, you know, if you're a brand new guitar player, you could probably learn to play this and. Pretty fast. You'd get a cramp by the end of it, but you'd still be able to do it. And it's just a simple tune. I'm thinking about the coffee houses, you know?
Oh, yeah.
My delight, she's a natural girl. My delight, she's a natural girl. And I love my baby more than anything in this whole world. My delight, she's a natural girl. Yeah, she got a job in a factory. My delight got a job in a factory. She brings all her money right on home to me. My delight, she's a natural girl. Natural girl. Oh yeah, she works so hard. My delight, she works so hard. Got an apartment with room for my hot rod in the yard. Well, my delight, she's a natural girl. My little girl gives me vegetables in bed. My delight gives me vegetables in bed. When I get worried, she's my aching head. My delight, she's a natural girl. My delight, she's a natural girl. My delight, she's a natural girl. I love my baby more than anything in this whole world. My delight. light, she's a natural girl.
Lovely. That's beautiful. Thank you, Terry. A simple little tune about vegetables in bed. That's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I posted your picture up online. We'll use... I think I've got reverb on my
voice. Yeah,
headset.
Sorry about that.
Put your picture up online. We'll let people know that you're on the air now. Maybe they'll tune in.
Yeah, for sure.
That was really nice. Wow.
I love the sound of that guitar.
It's nice, hey?
Yeah, it really is.
Really nice. Yeah. Really nice.
It speaks loudly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're getting together with Wayne and Lindell this Saturday, but I know you're off very shortly after that on yet another journey.
Yes, well, it's all part of the one tour. It's kind of like this birth tour. I feel like I'm birthing something here, you know. I mean, just a whole lot of things came together, forces that one is, you know, across the country. If you add the election to that, which I've seriously meditated a lot about, you know, during the trip, and the things that have happened I've had personal things happen in my life, some pretty dramatic stuff. So that's, you know, all natural good stuff, but big. Mm-hmm. And so pile all that together with everything I'm thinking about music, and we're renovating, well, actually rejuvenating the studio. Mm-hmm. So we're going to spend the month of December. There's three or four projects on the go. And one of them is Roots Movement. That is the reggae band in Ottawa.
Oh.
And Roots Movement is also, when I play with a reggae band, they're my reggae band. They're like my guys, who I've played with for the last 40, 45 years. And I'm going to Jamaica next week with Owen, the bass player from Roots Movement.
Okay.
And we're going to spend 2 weeks there. In preparation, well, while we're there, we're going to play with two gigs at least with Glenn DaCosta, who is a sax player for Bob Marley for the last 10 years of his life. So that's cool, you know.
Yeah.
And then when we get back, we'll spend the month tightening everything up, and then we're going to go January and February back to Jamaica for those 2 months. But
wow.
But this when we come back from the 2 weeks, that will conclude the Arctic Circle to the Equator tour.
Yes.
The one tour.
Next we'll have to be way south of the equator. You'll have to hit South America next.
Well, the new Minister of Transportation is an astronaut.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah.
That's right.
The sky's the limit, as they
say.
That's
right.
That's right. Wow.
Maybe you could do the circumference of the Earth above the equator, you know, in a satellite or something, in the space station.
Well, I wouldn't actually mind just hanging around Vancouver Kill for a little while. I think that would be really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you did some posters, and I think you've got a Christmas concert coming.
There it is right there, December the 15th at the Granary.
At the Granary, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'll be...
You and your two twin brothers.
Yes, aren't they something?
Yeah.
You've cloned yourself finally. So maybe you will get to stay in Vancouver if you're clones who sort of crisscross the country and go flying back between...
Imagine if we were holograms and we could be several places at once. Yeah. Wow.
It's coming.
It is probably coming. I shouldn't say it in jest. It probably is coming. So what kind of music do you play in Jamaica? Is it different from what you play here? Do you sort of adjust?
Yeah, I have been able... I do a mix always. Like every time, if you listen to everything I do, there's always an element of reggae.
Reggae,
in it.
Yeah.
There's always an element of blues. And what happens is I just, depending on the environment, I just push it one way or the other. So... What happens in and then of course, you know, you do a specifically blues song in the blues environment, and in Jamaica or the reggae environment, which I do hear from time to time, play reggae songs, people that are read or recognized as reggae. And there's something really good that's happened, and that is that music has become more eclectic, or the listeners have.
Yeah.
Now everything was separated into genres not long ago for the purpose really of marketing. And people, I don't know, they kind of had, you know, you see people say, oh, I like this kind of music, but I don't like that kind, you know?
Yes.
And you don't see that so much anymore. People are pretty open-minded about pretty well everything. Mm. And the music, like everybody in the world can access all music, which is, this is the first time ever. It's, and, you know, it was in the 60s. Like, remember when the Beatles showed up with a sitar one day Everybody just freaked out.
And everybody went, yeah.
Because nobody had ever heard any Indian music.
No,
what the heck is that?
That's right. You had to work at it to get that music.
Yeah.
You know, in those days, we were ethnomusicologists. You know, to be a musician, you had to do that. Well, not anymore. Everybody's heard that kind of music. So what it means is that somebody like me who has been mixing these two and running into troubles, like I'll do a blues gig and then do a reggae tune, and the critics say, oh, well, it's not a very good blues band. They did a reggae song. And literally, that
wow.
happened. So, but that was then, you know,
it's over now.
Less
and less that doesn't happen anymore, right?
You know, now. Yeah. I mean, for a while I stayed away from doing that kind of thing. But the last time we were in Jamaica, there was a blues festival there and we played that. And our thing was the mix of blues and reggae at the same time, which we could do. And you know, finally they said, here's a license to do what you do.
Yeah.
So we did it and wow, you know. So we can get into the, you know, we got a reggae band and they practice the blues, you know. So we'd start with a thing and then say, okay, reggae, woof, and off we go. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It's reminding me of the gig that we saw you do with the reggae band from China.
With Long Shen Dao.
Yeah. That was phenomenal. I mean, talking about crossover and cross-pollination. I mean,
incredible. Yeah. And you know what? Something I had a revelation of. I have them quite regularly, of course, but I had one the other day. Was we were talking about reggae music and doing it and people who, because it's difficult, it's extremely difficult to get the feeling of, you know, the pure feeling of the blues or the pure feeling of reggae music, and you got to love it a lot and you got to know some things and there's some little tricks that you have to learn, you know. And so in any case, and then I thought of the tune Exodus, Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when that came out and I first heard it, I says, that's not a reggae song. It's a crossover song.
Yes.
It has African music in it. Yeah. There's a rock thing to it. It's not really heavy in the rock, but it's a straight ahead dance tune. It's a chant. It's got a piece of reggae in it. This is the music of the future.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
You know? So when you're learning reggae music, you don't need, no, you learn that feeling. You know,
yeah.
And then
the essence of the music.
Yeah,
is.
What it was that inspired that. That's the music that we're looking for. You know?
That's interesting.
That's what a lot of musical descriptions of concerts, I almost wonder if it's the promoters doing it. You know, you'll read that somebody will say they're a roots, jazz, fusion, house. You know, they have like 17 different words, but
Our business in particular, the media is always trying to come up with labels, right? Just because it's convenient and it's handy.
But
most really good music defies any kind of labeling,
not,
I think.
You know what? I think it helped at one time. But, you know, for instance, like I'm not that youthful. I mean, you know, in my spirit I am, but I, you know, I'm not a youth. And I ran across a guy one day who from Montreal. He came to see me, actually, in the studio. It was just 10 years ago. And he said, listen, the reason I wanted to come and see you is because... And this guy made hip-hop music. He was a producer.
Okay.
And he did good stuff.
Yeah.
Really, real good musical ear, and he made this good stuff. And I had contacted him because I wanted to learn how to do this.
You know? Make beats?
Yeah. Do some of that, you know?
Yeah.
And so he said, I'll come and visit. He came to visit. He says, the reason I really came is because I wanted to meet somebody who could play an instrument.
Wow. That's interesting.
This guy's a musician, and I'm not putting him down. I'm saying, I really embrace that music. I think it's great. You
mm-hmm.
know? Now, I couldn't get into the beats. I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I do something else that is hard to learn. And why should I do that? They should do that. I'll do what I do.
Yeah.
Because they can't do that.
No. But they play with loops and tape decks and samples and stuff.
It's a funny thing. I like beat music too, and house music and hip hop. And then you're listening to it all of a sudden, and then it sort of makes. Sometimes you just think, I need some music, like musicians, you know, because turning on, I know it is music, and I love it. And I have a lot of those, the guys, I can't think of the name of them now, but there's a whole bunch of them on YouTube where there's just like these 3-hour mixes, and there's a guy with a huge board of stuff in front of him, and this one musical thing just goes on in different directions for 3 hours or so, but... That's the other thing I wondered when music sort of became accessible to everybody. I know Jean and I had talked about this. You know, will the authentic, you know, the African music, will that disappear? The Zimbabwean music, the Ugandan music?
It won't.
I've come to that conclusion too. I don't think it will, because it feels like it just opens up and more people have access to it. And then there's more, like you said, the song can be anything, and you don't think it'll disappear either.
Oh, no, it won't for sure. Because the people who make that music and, you know, hanging out in Jamaica, there's some old school players there.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm really interested in where music came from more than anything. Now, not all musicians are. Everybody's in this game for a different reason, right? But I got hooked into it because I just was so fascinated with where it came from and what it was. Where would it come from? Like, most of the stuff I do is really old. And not the tunes aren't old, but the music is old.
Yeah.
And I know it's old. And hip-hop, those samples,
yes.
Those things they sample, they're all really old. But you put it together in a new package. Well, I'm not interested in the packaging so much. I mean, we do that. But the old thing, the people that are fascinated with how to make a groove work are part of the ancient musicians guild of people who find each other and they study this stuff.
Yeah.
Like how to take a four beat bar and where exactly to put the phrasing.
Yes.
You know? And you can write it on a piece of paper, but that doesn't translate. It doesn't matter.
No.
Without a conductor, a symphony orchestra can't play. So that's that kind of thing. So it's that little... So how many musicians are into that? Oh, not that many. But enough that it's never going to die. They're really into it.
Where would you say reggae music has its roots? Like, where? What's the origin of...
Oh, that's easy. It's Rastafarian drumming, which goes back to the most ancient continuous Christian church there is, longer by far than the Catholic Church, the Copts, way back in Ethiopia, a very long time ago, and they have a continuous history of playing this form of drumming, and it's really simple.
Yeah.
But it requires a lot of concentration to get it right because it is so simple. And that music is so ska and the fast mento music from Jamaica, kind of the folk music, you know?
Yes.
That was the music of... every country has a kind of a folk music that develops. But those beats go back... they go back 400 years in the Caribbean, and they go back thousands of years in Africa. And I'm talking with people about this, you know, regularly. It's a great subject.
It is a great
subject.
You
sit around and say, well, you know, my friend went to this place in Benin.
Yes.
And he literally found a place where there was the hut of the musicians' guild, and they had hand-carved pictures and kind of effigies of the guy said, here's my father, he was a musician.
Yes.
And this is my grandfather. Little carvings with something. They go back 11,000 years.
Wow.
Now, we don't know anything about this stuff in our world because...
No. We're quite young over here.
Who really cares? I mean, you know, what's the point? But underneath it all, there's this. Mm-hmm. There are these people who've been doing this all this time, you know, and they never... And it's continuous. It's unbroken. Like during the Second World War, it had nothing to do with these guys.
Yeah.
They just kept doing what they do.
Yeah. That's
incredible. So that's, and all the music, I'm convinced, I mean, I'm following this up to some extent, is it all the music that moves us comes from this? All of it.
Hmm.
Whoa, that's just so good. Like polka in Poland, you know. Comes from this.
Yeah. I know sometimes when you start listening to different kinds of music, it feels like there's a whole bunch of lines crossing the globe, linking Bulgaria with polka music or African music with, of course, the gospel and the blues, but it's all, and even the Irish, the Celtic music, the French music,
blues,
where does the difference
blues,
in the...
When it just reminds me, Amaryllis, the choir.
Your choir, I was thinking of that
chart,
too.
They brought a woman up from North Carolina who was a gospel expert, right? She came in and she did a workshop with them for a week long, I think, before getting ready for a concert that they were doing of gospel music. And we sat in on some of those classes. It was really, really interesting. But she had this tree a poster of it, the tree of all the influences of black music and how they came through rock and roll and blues and everything. It was just amazing. I mean, it just showed
up going right
everywhere.
Back into Africa and even the Arabian music and Middle Eastern music.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Lebanese music and the early Christian music. I mean, it all seems
The Greeks knew all about tempered music tempered music came from that, but... Mm. You know, all the modal music, all the things that we call music, the Greeks had it all figured out.
I didn't know that.
Mathematic.
That's interesting.
It's essentially when human beings are in an environment, they make sounds. They talk.
Yeah.
And that's music.
Yeah.
So you just organize that over thousands of years, and the next thing you know, you got whatever.
You just wonder who sang the first note. I was just saying to one of the journalists today, I was saying, when you're writing, you should hear it. You know, that the words are, it has to have...
A music to it, almost, a cadence.
It has to have the music. You can't start every sentence going, the boy got up this morning, the girl crossed the street, the sump. I mean, that's got a cadence, but you have to turn it around to make...
It's singing.
It is like singing.
Slow motion singing.
It's so cool.
It's got a scan.
It is. It really is. Just and you often think, how could there be so much music with so few notes? I was just thinking that this morning, like, who said, you know, there were going to be so many notes with so many letters and that these are what they sound like? How come there's not an extra note in there?
Well,
you know,
actually,
like,
there are.
It feels like that.
If you're in Arabia, they have a 22-note scale in one place.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Ours is only 12.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is that the Indian, the voice bending, that they do, and the throat singing, and the other, you know, and our singing here it could be so much bigger.
It will be. I think.
I mean, it's good. We have so much.
I think that the singing of I don't know what to call it. I don't think it's a politically correct thing to describe who we are, but our singing, we'll just say that, our entire culture is not very physical compared to the rest of the world.
No, we don't dance in the streets.
We're kind of uptight that way.
Yeah, and you
but
can
you
hear
think,
that.
It sounds like you think we're on the path.
Oh, we're getting it.
To evolution.
Well, we were afraid of the rest of the world for a long time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And if you're afraid of another culture or think of them as your enemy, well, how the hell can you learn from them. Their music?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, that's what somebody said to me. A whole bunch of us were up dancing at the granary and somebody said, you know, why can't we do more of this? Like, I feel good when I'm dancing.
Yeah.
You know, and another I had written about in the paper too, that the Montreal Gelsey community, the Italians come up and they danced in the streets in St. Anne de Prescott of all places. And they were just letting it out and having a great time. And what evolved out of that was some of the area residents going to Italy, learning how to dance these folk dances. But imagine that we come from Europe where there were festivals in the streets and dancing in the streets. And we came over here.
We're rediscovering
it. We put big coats on and we went into our log cabins and said, holy crap, it's too cold over here to go out or something. But we lost that somehow because...
But rediscovering it.
That's
awful. Well, look, this is a circular conversation. We're back to where we started.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back in the home.
Yeah. You go.
Where you have.
Yeah.
We had the kitchen parties.
That's where music lived,
things,
right? There was always. Yeah. That's
and,
right. An instrument of some kind,
and you open your door, and you have, and you extend your hospitality to somebody outside your immediate family.
Yeah.
And
part of that was sharing music with them.
And so we do that as a whole culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool.
That's true.
You know,
we're right back.
So that makes you one of our cultural ambassadors to the world, you know? Like when you go to Jamaica or Alaska or wherever, you know, you're representing sort of the heartthrob of Canada.
I feel it.
The heartbeat.
I'm maybe the heartthrob.
You could be the heartthrob, but I knew he meant the heartbeat.
That was intentional.
I told you, I'm all about words, too. Yeah. No offense.
I think that's a big deal. Well, something that happened in Ottawa was very interesting. A long time ago, 69, I learned how to play reggae music. I had heard it, and I'd studied it, and I couldn't figure it out. And I was an accomplished musician at that time. And I went and approached my friend, well, who is now my friend, Trevor Brewster. And I said, would you show me how to do this? Just how to do this.
Yeah, we're just going to say, what's hard about it?
Like, how to do that. And he said, well, I can't show you right now because we're at a gig, you know. But I got together with him, and it was difficult because the two cultures were really separate. And anyway, I got together with him, and I pushed really hard. And he showed me how to do this thing. And we got to be pals because of that, because I showed an interest in it. Mm-hmm. And then within a year, I recorded a reggae record and released it. Well, because I did that, the Jamaican musical community gave me a huge amount of respect.
Mm, interesting.
Because they couldn't do that. They weren't in a position to be able to do that. They probably could have, but they didn't.
And you mean releasing a record, an album?
They couldn't release a record. They couldn't get the backing or whatever, because in those days you couldn't just make
And they
one.
Hadn't developed their homegrown studios yet, I guess.
Well, there was homegrown studios. There was no homegrown studios then.
Okay, yeah.
Hmm. You know, that was 1969, 1970.
Oh, yeah. So
in those days,
predated that, yeah.
If you didn't have $20,000, you couldn't press the first one.
That's right.
You know?
Wow.
That's right.
That's how it worked, mm-hmm. you know. But so I made a reggae record, and it was played on the radio, and it was a big deal and all that. And so as a result, these guys consider me the godfather of reggae in Ottawa.
Wow.
The godfather of reggae because and the brother of the blues.
I got them in.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I did that thing.
You opened the door.
And I didn't think much of it at the time. I just was following my own whatever. But then I really said, wow, you know, well, somebody had to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And then once it's done, then the door's open. Everybody can go.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that they gave me the credit for this, I prize this really highly.
I bet.
That's
Isn't
a
that
big
something?
Deal to me. That's you know, that's heartwarming.
That's a great honor because that's their national music, you know.
Yeah.
To give that to a white guy, that's pretty amazing.
Well, I'll tell you, Bob Marley was half white, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I watched a little clip of him yesterday because some friends of ours had gone to a concert in Ottawa on the weekend, and the person was proclaimed as the Bob Marley of Australia's Bob Marley, you know.
So Xavier, I looked it up. Xavier, somebody.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was looking it up to see, you know, when Bob Marley had come to Ottawa, and it was back in the early 70s, I think.
70s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there was an interview there, and he was talking about Rasta, and I think it was the host of CKCU that does the Jamaican program. I think he's still there, actually, talking
Junior.
To Bob Marley. Yeah, yeah. He was talking to him, but it was really interesting to watch Bob Marley talking about the inspiration for his music, and he looked very laid back, but very serious about what he was up to.
Well, I tried to talk with him once.
Yeah.
But
didn't get very far.
Well, it was just real high, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
He looked really high in this video clip too, yeah.
But the thing was, you know, when Bob Marley died, it was 1980, and I was, maybe it was 81, but it was right about then. And I was lying in my bed, I got a phone call, and they said, you come down to this studio, and I think it was CTV, I don't know what it was, and for, you know, something about Bob Marley. I said, oh, okay. So I went down there, and I was on a panel.
Hmm.
I was sitting next to the Jamaican High Commission. Hmm. And, you know, all these people are like, oh, what do you think about Bob Marley? I said, wow, man, why am I here? This is, whoa. But it was because I was playing reggae music, you know, and who else is waving the flag?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's
kind
of like.
Wow. That was an acknowledgement of your role in that, you know.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's really great.
Yeah.
We are at the end, and this was so enjoyable, and I still don't know what exactly how you describe reggae. Is it about the space between the...
Yes, it's about the space. You got it.
That's what I feel like.
That's
it is.
Right.
It's
the
it's
space, and then, oh, wow, back again.
Yeah. Well, we'll close off, and thank you very much for coming in, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been a pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure to be here. Thank you
very
much.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Terry.
Yeah.